digamos, la expresión de los análisis de relaciones internacionales. Yo creo que hay que volver eso, a despojarse del espejismo burocrático, saber qué se quiere hacer con la Unión Europea y en función de eso, en este caso hablamos de energía, en función de lo que se quiere hacer en materia energética, pues habrá que evaluar todo lo demás para garantizar esos objetivos. Pero hacerlo en el vacío, hacerlo en abstracto, pues lleva a eso, a ciencia ficción, en fin, donde ya tenemos una cierta sobredosis.
On energy, first of all, the gentleman in the back, you are right. The energy is coming from the East is not everything. Middle East and Africa are crucial. It's about this mix of energy. If, for instance, Central Asia, the energy that we could get from Central Asia, mostly gas, it would only make about 3% of EU consumption. So that's not that much. There are a lot of plans for new gas pipelines, and always there is a political question, should we go around Russia or should we work with Russia? I would say we need to try and depoliticize this and to leave it for a part to business, because the more pipelines, the better, through Russia or around Russia. Next to energy, I would like to make one point on NATO. I was very interested by the last two speakers, excellent presentations. About NATO enlargement, was it a big mistake? I heard at one point. First of all, NATO has this open door policy. It says that every country in the Euro-Atlantic area that wants to join, in principle, could join as long as they meet the criteria. In the past, there has been one country that applied for NATO membership and was immediately refused. But that was in 1949, and it was the Soviet Union. So they didn't get it. But for me, in essence, on NATO enlargement, if it was a mistake or if it was good, I think the essence of this is we cannot judge what these countries that wanted to become member should do or should not do. We could not morally say to countries like Poland and Czech Republic and Romania, we could not say to them, you cannot be a member because it might aggravate Russia. These countries can decide themselves if they want to be a member or not. And this is not for Russia to decide. So I think the policy of enlargement in that sense has always been the right one, also in a sense of democratization. But still, there are different differences of views on NATO. For instance, in Spain, I suppose, we look at NATO as defense cooperation, being ready for new missions, that not only military but also development. Those are the topics we are concerned in if we think about NATO. If you ask the same question in Poland, they are mostly a member of NATO of Article number 5, which defends the country on a territorial basis, and they have a real fear of Russia. So there are different views. But to end with a brief quote from the Russian ambassador to NATO to try and explain what the Russian view on this is, and he's a fierce nationalist making life difficult for NATO officials. He said, well, in Russia we see NATO enlargement as follows. We all of a sudden have a new neighbor, and this neighbor one day comes to our house and he asks, can I borrow a cup of sugar? Because I don't have any sugar at home. So we say, of course, here you have some sugar. Then the next day he comes back again and he says, I don't have any food in my house. Can I please join you for dinner? So Russia again says, of course, you can have dinner with me. No problem. Then one day later he says, neighbor again arrives and he says, could I maybe lend your car? I don't have a car and I need a car. So Russia again says, okay, you can have the car, use it. And then the last day, the neighbor again appears and he says, could I maybe make use of your wife and lend your wife? And that's the relationship how Russia sees NATO. It wants more and more and more, and the enlargement goes on. Still, I think it's up to the member, to the countries, to decide if they want to be a member or not. Maybe as a start to a discussion on this, but...
¿Alguna pregunta más? Entonces voy a hacer uso de mi posibilidad también de formular preguntas. A mí me interesaría mucho saber la opinión. Me gustaría saber mucho la opinión de todos los miembros del panel sobre el papel de Medvedev y sobre todo a raíz de la visita reciente de Obama a Moscú. Porque me da la impresión, por lo que vi, por lo que se habló en la prensa alemana y por algún comentario también en el Herald Tribune, de que Obama parecía estar bastante más interesado en hablar con Medvedev que con Putin. Y también la canciller alemana últimamente está dando señales también en esta misma dirección. Parece que interesa más hablar con el presidente de Rusia, porque al parecer ven en él una... bueno, deriva democrática mucho más acentuada que en el caso de Putin. No sé si, por ejemplo, Andrew Wilson está en la misma línea o él sigue pensando que son dos caras del mismo Júpiter.
Well, the recent Moscow summit went extremely well, with one exception. The one mistake that Obama made, I think, was this kind of attempt to draw a distinction too crudely between Medvedev and Putin, to call Putin a guy with a guy of the past. You know, Putin bears grudges more or less indefinitely, so he'll remember that. Well, you have to go back to why Medvedev was originally appointed, which is probably the right word rather than elected. He's not a kind of chrysalis liberal, right, waiting to somehow emerge. At least there's not any evidence of that yet. Last time I was in Moscow, 2 weeks ago, somebody defined the difference as follows. Putin runs the country, Medvedev does the PR. Now, part of that is kind of outreach to liberals, remaining liberals from the 1990s, like Gontmacher and Jürgens in their think tank. But this kind of think tank in Moscow, the Institute for Contemporary Development, I think, which is the kind of first port of call for Western visitors looking for kind of evidence of a new reformist mood, is desperately short of money and constantly complains that Medvedev turns up, says nice things to them, but doesn't provide them with money, resources or influence. And more broadly, it's very clear that Russia is not being forced by the crisis to reform, not yet anyway. It thinks it can survive with the existing system and using existing resources. There may be a double hit, you know, if the oil price falls again, or if Russia is hit by a kind of banking or currency crisis, then that kind of contingent plan may be more severely tested, but that's what they think. One guy said, we have survived a stress test. And by we, he meant the political system. So Medvedev is still very much orbiting around planet Putin. He has some limited, I wouldn't say independence, but there is a kind of division of labour
but I wouldn't put it any more than that. You know, we have to remember who appointed him, why he was appointed. In the most recent opinion poll I saw by Levada Institute, the number of people who identified Medvedev as the person who leads Russia, bad translation from Russia, you know, is Medvedev in charge, the number has gone down in his first year in office. So it's only about
20%.
20%? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Though, of course, on a diplomatic level, presidents talk to presidents, sure, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you're in Moscow.
Yeah. Very briefly, curious to see who is in charge. In principle, I agree with Andrew, but certainly Medvedev has ambitions to build his own power base at one point. But it reminds me of 10 years ago when you read about Russia and always the question was, who is in charge? Is it Yeltsin? Is it certain factions in the parliament? Is it the oligarchs? Or are it the armed forces? Who makes the decisions? And then when Putin came, of course, it became clear it was Putin and certain segments of the security services. But now, maybe in 1 or 2 years, we can ask that question again. Who is in charge in Russia?
Sí, yo creo que al tratar este tema se corre el riesgo de volver a los tiempos de los criminólogos, ¿no? Volver a ver qué pasa dentro de las paredes del Kremlin. Pero yo básicamente estoy de acuerdo con lo que ha dicho Andrew. El intentar dividir o establecer una divisoria entre Putin y Medvedev, creo que esto no es realista, porque evidentemente Medvedev ganó unas elecciones, pero fue cooptado, quiero decir, fue nombrado para ocupar este cargo, y seguramente, eso me arriesgo a decirlo, igual está calentando la silla para cuando haya una reforma y se pueda presentar Putin, ¿no? El policía bueno, policía malo, tal vez, bueno, va. Pero la clave, yo creo que en este sentido, es la estructura del poder, la naturaleza, mejor dicho, del poder. Es una naturaleza del poder autocrática, no respetuosa. Quiero decir, antes lo hemos comentado, de que si la OCDE, por ejemplo, en la República de Kazajstán, hubo elecciones, si no me equivoco, en el 2007, la OCDE dijo que no habían sido democráticas. En Uzbekistán, me parece, no, el 2005 en Kazajstán, 2007 en Uzbekistán, la OCDE dijo que no, tampoco eran democráticas. Bien, en las últimas elecciones rusas, los dirigentes de Moscú eliminaron esa posibilidad, dijeron que no hay observadores. Por lo tanto, esto es la naturaleza del poder ruso. Teniendo en cuenta, además, una cosa que es que se ha apuntado ahora, qué pasará o qué puede pasar con la reforma en función de también la economía rusa. Bien, evidentemente depende del precio del petróleo, del gas natural, etcétera. Pero fíjese, hace cuestión de ahora, todavía no hace un año, Condoleezza Rice, en una entrevista en el New York Times, creo que era en el Review, le preguntaron que por la Rusia del futuro, que si lo veía como una potencia emergente. Dijo una cosa muy interesante, de que veía a Rusia como un gigante con los pies de barro, por una sencilla razón. Primero, el dinero que se ha ganado con el petróleo y con el gas natural en Rusia, ¿dónde ha ido a parar? ¿Dónde ha ido a parar? Quiero decir, no me lo pregunto yo, me lo preguntan medios occidentales como The Economist, como Business Week. Quiero decir, ¿dónde ha ido a parar el dinero? Hay una idea que no se ha materializado o invertido en una economía productiva. Después, Rusia tiene un problema que es la demografía. No faltará mucho tiempo antes de que quede superada, por ejemplo, por Pakistán. Es un problema para Rusia, y en este sentido tanto la cuestión económica, lo que puede hacer es que si va la crisis, los precios del petróleo no le ayudan, en este sentido yo creo que la autocracia puede salir no reforzada, pero sí aunque haya un reparto de papeles entre el policía bueno y el policía malo, de cara a la liberalización del sistema político ruso, no soy optimista en esto.
De acuerdo, solamente que a mí me parece.
As regards what might happen in 2 or 3 years' time, there are two interesting things that have happened recently. One, when the next president is elected in 2012, he, presumably, not she, will serve for 7 years, not four. Secondly, the Russian constitution seems to be very clear. It says no president shall serve more than two consecutive terms. So Putin could return in 2012. But secondly, just to make sure, the constitutional court had its personnel and its powers changed, just to make sure there would be no objection if Putin did decide to come back.
¿Hay alguna otra pregunta más? No puede ser que con este lujo de expertos no haya ninguna pregunta más. Bueno, pues si es así, entonces lo dejamos. Muchísimas gracias por estar aquí con nosotros y nos vemos mañana otra vez de nuevo. Hasta mañana.
Putin, you know, remembers the